Before we begin this episode of Cut the Clutter, let me get this clarification out of the way. A war is not about to break out between Russia and Japan. Not now, not in the 21st century, and definitely not while Vladimir Putin comes calling to Delhi, which is over the next couple of days. But some things happened. Russia, Putin's Russia, has moved a bunch of coastal defense missiles to one of these key islands in what is called as the Kuril Island chain. Now look at the map of this part of the world. It's a bit complicated, and you will see many names you are more familiar with, particularly if you've been reading those Cold War bestsellers, thrillers, stuff like that. So Kamchatka Peninsula, also Sakhalin Island. Sakhalin is Russia's largest island. It has a lot of oil and gas. In fact, even ONGC had invested in some of these properties, some of these assets quite some time back. It's large storehouses. This is part of the extended part of the Siberian region. So this is the Asian part of Russia. Now, next to that, just where Kamchatka Peninsula ends, you see a string of chota, tiny islands. Or then these become islets. These are Kuril Islands. Kuril Islands, Russians call these Kuril Islands, all of them. The Japanese call some of these their northern territories. So dispute is not about all these islands. Dispute is essentially about the last four. Last four are called Iturup, Kunashir, and their Japanese variations on this. Kunashir, for example, becomes Kunashiri for Japanese. So Iturup, Kunashir, Shikotan, and also Habomai Islets. So the southernmost of these are called Habomai Islets. These are uninhabited tiny islands, but a bunch of them. So effectively, this is like a thin archipelago that goes right up to Kamchatka Peninsula. The southern end of it, which is the Habomai Islets, the last of these islets is just a few miles, a few kilometers away from the place called Nimuro. On Japan's Hokkaido Island. So it's very close to Japan. Similarly, if you look at these islands, and if you are a Russian national security planner or defense planner, you worry about the possibility that Americans, if the Japanese have these islands, Americans put their bases or their systems or their missiles or whatever, their sensors in these places, then it gets much too close for their comfort. It gets very close to Siberia for them, to their landmass. They don't want any of that. So these islands have great strategic value, Cold War or no Cold War, at any point of time. Now, there's a complicated history in terms of how Russians came to control these islands, and I will tell you that, because these islands have changed hands since the 17th century many times, depending on who was the Dada of the region. For immediate understanding, after Second World War, when Second World War began, Japanese owned these islands. Russia did not enter the war against Japan until 9th of August 1945. And you remember that date? That is when Americans had already dropped the first atomic bomb on the Japanese, and the Japanese generals had surrendered. It is only at that point that Russia decided to join the war against the Japanese. Until then, they had not done so. And the Russians then claimed that at Yalta. Now, Yalta is a place in Crimea, which again is a region which is currently in news, involves the Russians, because Crimea is the region in Ukraine, or formerly in Ukraine in a way, that the Russians have gone and grabbed and declared a part of their country. So it was in the city of Yalta in Crimea that Russians claim that Franklin Roosevelt promised Stalin that, look, you enter the war against the Japanese, and if you do that, I will let you keep the ownership of entire Kuril Islands. It was by 1949 that the Russians had taken complete control of the Kuril Islands, and they declared them as part of their own country. So Supreme Soviet passed a resolution in 1949 saying that this is a part of Russia, inalienable part of Russia. Now, the Japanese never accepted it, and thereby lies a story, and that's how problems started. Japanese people of a minority community, this is a Hokkaido minority community called Aimus. AIMU. A bunch of them used to live on these islands. So Russians, after they took over, they deported them to Japan. And then Russians also Russified these islands by bringing in people from their own territory and settling Russians in these places. As we speak, in these islands, about 30,000 Russians live. There is also a sizable Russian base in the island called Ituru. It's a sizable base. It's also an air base. This is where Russians have also brought their fighter planes at various points of time, and also their S-300 missiles a few years back, over which the Japanese had protested, and now I presume there are S-400 missiles also. What the Russians have now done is that in the island called Matua, which is about 11 kilometers long, it's not a large island, 11 kilometers long, they have brought in Bastion surface-to-surface missiles. These are missile batteries that you deploy on in your coastal areas to take on ships, submarines or threats coming in over the surface, over water, up to 500 kilometers, right? So it's a sizable range missile, and these batteries you can put on your coastline to protect your territory. Now, certainly, the Japanese are not going to send an armada in 21st century to take these islands forcibly. And there is almost no possibility that Russians will be firing these missiles. But these missiles have been brought there to make a political statement. We have to understand why that political statement. What are the Russians trying to say? Is Putin only trying to tell the rest of the world that, look, you guys are going on and on about Indo-Pacific, but I am also a stakeholder in the Pacific, because just to the left of what you call, just to one side of what you call Indo-Pacific is also Russia. And I need access to the Pacific. And my access to the Pacific for all 12 months of the year depends on my holding the Kuril Islands, because most of those seas, most of the waters around the Sea of Okhotsk and Vladivostok is where Russia's large Pacific fleet is positioned, submarines, surface ships, everything. I don't want to be frozen in Vladivostok for any part of the year. So the only channels, the only strait in this region that does not freeze over in the winter is between these islands. And there is no way I am going to let you come anywhere near this. Now, this is also followed just days after Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov said what sounded like almost rude words about Indo-Pacific. And he said, what is this? This was an open region with a lot of harmony, etc., etc. Why are we forming small cliques here? That was just an echo of exactly what the Chinese have been saying about Indo-Pacific, or what Wang Yi, Chinese foreign minister, said in the same conference or same summit of the three foreign ministers, that is Russia, China and India. So maybe this is a follow-up to that, and it's also a reminder to Japan that, look, you may be a Quad member and you think Quad is about Indo-Pacific and it's about China, but don't count us out. Hum bhi to khade hain raahon mein, right? A bit like that we also matter here and we have a stake here, because we need access to the Pacific. Our access to the Pacific, 12 months of the year, depends on us owning Kuril Islands, over which you have claims. So once again, it's a reminder to the Japanese that, look, this is not a settled issue as yet. At least that is how I see it. Now, in 2016 also, Russians had done something similar. They had brought their missiles and all, and Japanese had protested, but Russians didn't bother. In fact, if anything, they started building a sizable military garrison in Ituru. Now they are saying they will build a garrison in Matua also. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov, I read him in TASS and other places, he's been quoted as saying, look, this is our territory. We can deploy our military elements wherever we wish. Hamari zameen hai. We can do what we want with it. But we want friendly relations with Japan. We don't want hostile relations with Japan. And I told you also that it's not as if the two countries are going to go to war. The Russians are making a political point to Japan, to America, and in a way to Japan's Quad partners, and also maybe, I am guessing, but also maybe, but I don't think it's such a bad guess though. The Russians are also telling the Japanese that don't worry, don't feel isolated in Indo-Pacific. we are also a Pacific power and we are right here. So we are not getting into a war with anybody. It's not as if a free for all or a gang war will break out in the Pacific Ocean. But we are also around and you can always count on us at least speaking up to bring back some balance in the region, just in case the Chinese feel that they have been isolated by the rise of the Quad and also the general sympathy of many other countries in this region with the Quad, because many others in this region have trouble with the Chinese, what I describe as the Chin Pidit Samaj. That's a lot of countries. So Russians are now saying, hum Chin Pidit nahi hai. If anything, Russian Chini bhai bhai. So maybe it's a little bit of a statement like that. So I can start with the most recent history of this dispute and then we can review some of the older history also, because a lot of these territorial problems are rooted in history 2-3 centuries back. And you know what? That we sometimes think that we have too many legacy boundary disputes in this subcontinent. But you can see that other countries, other powerful countries have also inherited legacy, boundary, territorial disputes for a long time. And in some cases like this one, all these territorial disputes have come up without any help from the colonial British, right? This was always between Imperial Japan and Imperial Russia. But Second World War onwards, 1949, I told you, Russia announced that this was part of their territory. 1951, there was a peace treaty between the Allies who had won the war and Japan, right? Because all the losers of the war were then signing on the dotted line. So Japan had already given away a lot of its sovereignty over its islands. In that peace treaty in San Francisco, Japan said, quote unquote, that they were giving up, quote unquote, all rights, title and claims to Kuril Islands. If that is what happened, then what is the dispute about? The dispute is about the fact, and disputes remains on the books because Russia did not sign that treaty. Why did the Russians not sign that treaty? Because once again, everything that begins somewhere comes right back at you. It's the wheel of life. It's the circle of life. So in 1951, Soviet Union said, we will not sign this treaty because this is not fair to other countries who were also victims of the Second World War, of fascists. Essentially what they meant was that China is not on the table. So just as then they were acting on behalf of China, even now, once again, they are close to China. So Russians did not sign this treaty. Because Russians did not sign this treaty, then the Japanese also said, all right, you didn't sign this treaty, so we are not accepting that we are giving away all the Kurils to you. These four Kuril Islands are ours. Until 1956, Soviet Union and Japan did not even declare the end of their war. So they did not even declare peace. But 1956, there was again high-level summits where the two countries decided to end the war formally, but they still did not sign a peace treaty. So after the Second World War, all the combatants had signed a peace treaty amongst themselves, but Russia and Japan did not, because of dispute over these four islands. It seems at some point Khrushchev had offered the two southernmost islands to Japan, saying that you take this and you settle with us. But the Japanese did not want it. Japanese wanted the larger islands also, because these two southernmost islands, one set is just a bunch of islets which are uninhabited, the other one is small. So Japanese wanted two more further north, but the Russians said no, and that's how dispute still remains. Now, how far back do we go with this? 1635 to 37 is when a bunch of Japanese explorers found these islands, and Japan began to say that these are part of our territory, but nobody was quite there yet. These are very inhospitable regions, and these regions also have extreme weather conditions. Then there was a Dutch expedition led by Martin de Vries that went into the islands. They discovered these and they also mapped these and also pointed these out to the rest of the world. Then a few years later, a Russian explorer, that is Vladimir Atlasov, right? Why he was called Atlasov, I don't know. But Vladimir Atlasov got there and he discovered again these islands. So Catherine the Great Russian queen, in 1786 said that because these were first discovered by our explorers, they belong to us. And so she took over these islands. But that is where things did not come to an end. See, we also know that in the 19th century, there was a bunch of wars between Russia and Japan, which were both great imperial powers in that region. So 1855, after the Russo-Japanese War, the Tsarist Russia agreed to give these four islands away. So the Japanese got this back in 1855. In 1875, the Japanese said that they had full claims to all of Russia's Sakhalin. In 1905, there was once again a Japan-Russian war, and this is the time when you see Russia is becoming, Tsarist Russia has become much weaker. Russia is not the power that it later became or it even is today, and it wasn't Soviet Union yet. 1905 is when Japan attacked Russia again, defeated it comprehensively, and occupied a lot of the southern part of the Sakhalin Island. And this remained like that. And then finally, when the Second World War took place, the Russians came and they took the islands back and they said, this is now final. So various things happened. 1637, 1697, 1786, 1855, 1875, 1905, when the Japanese again defeated the Russians comprehensively and took even half of Sakhalin Island, then the war of all wars, that is the Second World War, and then the Russians coming and redrawing the maps and saying that this was promised to us as spoils of war by none else than Franklin Roosevelt. So this is a done deal now. Now, what is so important about these islands, which look actually on the map a little bit trivial? What is it about these that is so important that two great powers with great interests in the region and friendship between each other are allowing it to hold their relationship to ransom? So I told you strategically that the strait between these islands is the only one around Vladivostok that does not freeze over in winter. So Russians want an access to Pacific Ocean for their Vladivostok fleet. That is a strategic reason. But there are also strong economic reasons, and they are not confined to tourism and shipping, etc., because there are lots of volcanoes here and lots of volcanic areas which are very attractive to tourists. It's not just that. It's also because these islands also have deposits of rhenium. Rhenium is among the rarest of rare metals in the world. Re with the atomic number of 75. Now, it is needed for very crucial uses. For example, an alloy of rhenium with nickel is used in the exhausts of jet engines to make turbine blades of jet engines. Actually, you need rhenium to build anything supersonic, and that's why it's very expensive. It's also very rare. It's not available in many places. And that also might be one of the reasons why the two countries are so emotional about these islands. Nevertheless, it's something that Vladimir Putin has reminded us and the rest of the world of just on the eve of his visit to Delhi. And remember, Japan along with India, Australia, US is a member of the Quad.